Chapter 9. Harry Seldon sat back in his chair, the vertical back giving as he did so, and allowing him to assume a half-reclining position. His hands were behind his head and his eyes were unfocused. His breathing was very soft indeed. Dawes Venabili was at the other end of the room, with her viewer turned off and the microfilms back in place. She had been through a rather concentrated period of revision of her opinions on the Florina incident in early Trantorian history, and she found it rather restful to withdraw for a few moments and to speculate on what it was that Seldon was considering. It had to be psychohistory. It would probably take him the rest of his life tracking down the byways of his semi-chaotic technique, and he would end with it incomplete, leaving the task to others, to Amaryl, if that young man had not also worn himself out on the matter, and breaking his heart at the need to do that. Yet it gave him a reason for living. He would live longer with the problem filling him from end to end, and that pleased her. Some day she would lose him, she knew, and she found that the thought afflicted her. It had not seemed it would be at the start, when her task had been the simple one of protecting him for the sake of what he knew. When it had become a matter of personal need, how could there be so personal a need? What was there about the man that caused her to feel uneasy when he was not in her sight, even when she knew he was safe, so that the deeply ingrained orders within her were not called into action? His safety was all that she had been ordered to be concerned with. How did the rest intrude itself? She had spoken of it to Demoiselle long before, when the feeling had made itself unmistakable. He had regarded her gravely and said, "You are complex, Dawes, and there are no simple answers. In my life there have been several individuals whose presence made it easier for me to think, pleasanter to make my responses. I have tried to judge the ease of my responses in their presence and the unease of my responses in their final absence, to see whether I was the net gainer or loser. In the process, one thing became plain. The pleasantness of their company outweighed the regret of their passing. On the whole, then, it is better to experience what you experience now than not to." She thought, "Ari will some day leave a void, and each day that some day is closer, and I must not think of it." It was to rid herself of the thought that she finally interrupted him. "What are you thinking of, Harry?" "What?" Seldon focused his eyes with an apparent effort. "Psychohistory, I assume. I imagine you've traced another blind pathway." "Well, now, that's not on my mind at all," he laughed suddenly. "Do you want to know what I'm thinking of?" "Hair."
"Hair? Whose?"
"Right now, yours." He was looking at her fondly. "Is there something wrong with it? Should I dye it another colour, or perhaps after all these years it should go grey?" "Come, who needs or wants grey in your hair? But it's led to other things. Nishaya, for instance."
"Nishaya? What's that?"
"It was never part of the pre-imperial kingdom of Trantor, so I'm not surprised you haven't heard of it. It's a world, a small one, isolated, unimportant, overlooked. I only know anything at all about it because I've taken the trouble to look it up. Very few worlds out of 25 million can really make much of a sustained splash, but I doubt that there's another one as significant as Nishaya, which is very significant, you see." Dawes shoved her reference material to one side and said, "What is this new penchant you have for paradox, which you always tell me you detest? What is the significance of insignificance?"
"Oh, I don't mind paradoxes when I perpetrate them. You see, Joranum comes from Nishaya."
"Ah, it's Joranum you're concerned with."
"Yes. I've been viewing some of his speeches, at Rach's insistence. They don't make much sense, but the total effect can be almost hypnotic. Rach is very impressed by him."
"I imagine that anyone of Dalite origins would be, Harry. Joranum's constant call for sector equality would naturally appeal to the downtrodden heat-sinkers. You remember when we were in Dal?"
"I remember it very well, and of course I don't blame the lad. It just bothers me that Joranum comes from Nishaya."
Dawes shrugged.
"Well, Joranum has come from somewhere, and conversely, Nishaya, like any other world, must send its people out at times, even to Trantor."
"Yes, but as I've said, I've taken the trouble to investigate Nishaya. I've even managed to make
hyperspatial contact with some minor official which cost a considerable quantity of credits that I cannot in good conscience charge to the department. And did you find anything that was worth the credits? I rather think so. You know, Geronimo is always telling little stories to make his points, stories that are legends on his home planet of Nishaya. That serves a good purpose for him here on Trantor, since it makes him appear to be a man of a people, full of homespun philosophy. Those tales litter his speeches. They make him appear to be from a small world, and to have been brought up on an isolated farm surrounded by an untamed ecology. People like it, especially Trantorians, who would rather die than be trapped somewhere in an untamed ecology, but who love to dream about one just the same. But what of it all? The odd point is that not one of the stories was familiar to the person I spoke to on Nishaya. That's not significant, Harry. Maybe a small world, but it's a world. What is current in Joranum's birth section of the world may not be current in whatever place your official came from. No. Folk tales, in one form or another, are usually worldwide. But aside from that, I had considerable trouble in understanding the fellow. He spoke galactic standard with a thick accent. I spoke to a few others on the world, just to check, and they all have the same accent. And what of that? Geronim doesn't have it. He speaks a fairly good Trantorian. It's a lot better than mine, actually. I have the Heliconian stress on the letter R. He doesn't. According to the records, he arrived on Trantor when he was 19. It is just impossible, in my opinion, to spend the first 19 years of your life speaking that barbarous Nishayan version of galactic standard, and then come to Trantor and lose it. However long he's been here, some trace of the accent would have remained. Look at Rach and the way he lapses into his Dalite way of speaking on occasion. And what do you deduce from all of this? What I deduce, what I've been sitting here all evening deducing like a deduction machine, is that Joranum didn't come from Nishaya at all. In fact, I think he picked Nishaya as the place to pretend to come from, simply because it is so backwoodsy, so out of the way, that no one would think of checking it. He must have made a thorough computer search to find the one world least likely to allow him to be caught in a lie. But that's ridiculous, Harry. Why should he want to pretend to be from a world he did not come from? It would mean a great deal of falsification of records. And that's precisely what he has probably done. He probably has enough followers in the civil service to make that possible. Probably no one person has done as much in the way of revision, and all of his followers are too fanatical to talk about it. But still, why? Because I suspect Joranum doesn't want people to know where he really comes from. Why not? All worlds in the Empire are equal, both by laws and by custom. I don't know about that. These high ideal theories are somehow never borne out in real life. Then where does he come from? Do you have any idea at all? Yes, which brings us back to the matter of hair. What about hair? I sat there with Joranum, staring at him and feeling uneasy, without knowing why I was feeling uneasy. Then finally I realized that it was his hair that made me uneasy. There was something about it, a life, a gloss, a perfection to it that I've never seen before. And then I knew. His hair is artificial, and carefully grown on a scalp that ought to be innocent of such things. Ought to be? Dor's eyes narrowed. It was clear that she suddenly understood. Do you mean... Yes, I do mean. He's from the past-centred, mythology-ridden, McCogan sector of Trantor. That's what he's been labouring to hide.